When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hello, guys, and welcome to episode 26 of With My Own Two Hands, which is officially the final episode of season one. I mean, the past year has flown by, and I've been thinking about all the amazing topics and chats we've had throughout these last 25 episodes. And dipping my toes into the podcast world is something that I've wanted to try for a long time. And I'm so happy that you guys have tuned in and enjoyed this longer form content. I can't wait to see you guys next season. And as always, please comment anything you'd like to see, from topics you'd like to hear and talk about, guests you'd like to see on the podcast, and anything else. Thank you so much for your continuous support and every comment and review you've left. It makes such a world of difference, and I love hearing from you. Today, I'm sharing my favorite moments from season one. From episode one, why I DIY and love it. Growing up, I always had that mentality, me do it. I always wanted to accomplish something on myself. So you could really say that DIY is in my blood. Like it is truly who I am at my core. And I've always had this like outlook of, well, if that person can do it, I can do it too. If they learned how to do it, so can I. And if they accomplished that, I mean, everyone was born, I have this mentality of like everyone was born the same way, you know, like we all came out the same way. So it's just a matter of acquiring the right skills and asking the right questions. And Google is my friend. I Google everything. And I didn't go to school for renovations. I'm not a contractor. I didn't even go to interior design school. I went to fashion design school. Now, a lot can be transferred over and applied, but I am self-taught. This is not a college degree. I am self-taught in all things. And Google is the best learning. Best place to learn all these things. From episode two, chatting with mom about our ever-changing decor styles and why we don't follow trends. We both have a similarity in style, but also my mom's style changes every few years completely. And I'm not talking a little bit.
Completely.
I'm talking totally different. And I want to hear from her how she does that, or like why she does that. One, why? Let's talk about why you think your trends or your style changes.
Because I'm ready to do something else. I think I get bored.
Oh.
And I'm ready to mix it up.
Well, that's understandable. You get bored with your house. And
yeah.
And you are a person that likes change.
But I really like the house. I just get bored with it. So I sell it with all the furniture in it.
Right.
So then I'm done and I can move on.
I used to call you guys serial flippers, but the difference is that you would live in them and not flip houses in terms of like renovating them, building from scratch. Mm-hmm. So building a home, they both my parents like build homes from scratch, design it. My mom literally draws the plans herself. And then they build it with contractors and stuff, come and build it, furnish it all to perfection, live in it for about 5 years and get this itch. Want to rebuild in a completely different style. From episode three, buying a home cash versus loan, because we have done both. Jumbo loan, I think in the year when we closed on the house in 2022 was, I think anything over like $600,000 was considered a jumbo loan. So there's even more kind of things that you have to really, like, you know, your credit score and your debt to income ratio has to be really, really good to get a jumbo loan. So look into that if you're like in California. I don't know if you can find property for less than that. I had to research that, and I had to research all of these abbreviations, and just Google is my friend in DIY projects, and Google is my friend in loan language, apparently, and just really educating myself. And I know so much more about the process, but I can tell you being like 4 months, that was November. So December, January, 2 months out of doing all of that. I don't plan on doing it again anytime soon. It was definitely traumatizing, but you just have to just buckle down and just handle it and keep reminding yourself that, you know, it's going to be over and you're going to have your, and what is it worth? What? Okay, let me go back. Was it worth it? Yes. That I get to sit in this house right now and call this home and call, like, fulfill a dream, 100% worth it. I would not give it up for anything. And I would do it again, all over again, if I had to, in order to feel the way that I felt living here for 3 weeks. From episode 4, a chat with mom about the ugly side of home building, our horror stories. I feel like we just in one house, I went through so many, you know, little mini horror stories. So the first thing, we went through 15 plumbers. 15. And we had constant, we were trying to get people out here. They wouldn't show up. We would contact another one. They would come. They would bid. They would say they were going to come to work. They wouldn't. One finally would show up. He did all the drainage in the back for the foundation. He messed it all up. And then he stole all of the I think $2,500 worth of plumbing materials that he picked up from the warehouse that I paid for and never came back. And then we were on the search again for another plumber. We had to buy more product. So that was one mini horror story.
And see, you're so healthy. You just said, I'll just buy some more. We'll just
behind
us.
I would
be on that guy's doorstep. I'd be following him. I would find him.
I know. It was just, you know, we were in those situations.
Yeah.
Then we were also, not only did we have the pandemic to deal with, the year we started building, we had rain every other day.
The
worst weather. We couldn't build we couldn't pour the foundation. We couldn't pour the concrete. We would get to the day we were supposed to do it, it would rain. We would reschedule. We would get to the day we were supposed to do it, it would rain. I mean,
and it would be pretty in between.
Oh yeah, beautiful weather, rain. It was like, there was a lot. But stealing someone's stuff is not acceptable.
Yeah,
horrible. Bad. Really horrible. Going through that many tradesmen and not being able to get them out here was horrible. And then there was something else major that happened. Did I block it out? Did I black out? The plumber woman thing was a bad thing. Stealing the stuff was bad.
I don't know. Every time there was something that happened that you were just frustrated with, you just dig in and do it yourself.
I did. I think that it's kind of caused me, I'm very much already a personality that likes to DIY and do things on my own anyways. So when you add in the layer of just, I don't like to depend on people really. I don't like to depend on someone else. And I'm a very punctual person. Like if I tell someone I'm going to be somewhere, I'm going to be there. And for these people to say that they were going to be there and not be there, it just aggravated me. So it caused me more stress than just Googling how to do it and doing it myself if I could. There were certain things that I just couldn't do
Oh, what?
I remember the other horror story, the electrician.
Oh, yeah. Oh, my goodness. Oh, I blocked it out too.
I did. I blocked it out. Is that it?
Oh, God, that was awful.
So we found the electrician. He comes out. He does all the wiring, everything. His guys come out. They're supposed to be done in a weekend. Blah, 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 blah. They do it, and then they've got to wait for the sheetrock, right? And so we finally got the drywall up, and we were ready for them to come back out. He came out for one day and disappeared. Gone. No one knows. Contractor can't get in touch with him. He's also working on other jobs for him. Can't get in touch with him. Gone. And it was just, we were supposed to move in. We were supposed to move forward. We couldn't do anything without the electricity. We were stuck.
Wasn't it his own house?
It was own house. Yeah, my contractor's own house this electrician was working on. He'd known him forever. Come to find out, he had gone through a divorce. He had disappeared. I'm like, my brain went to, is he okay? You know, like, what happened? You know, like, I tried to think about him as a person first. And then when a month and then 2 months and then the holidays are coming up and I still can't decorate the house. And then it become him personal and I'm like, no, I'm just aggravated now. Like now I'm just mad. So then this is kind of when I stepped away from my contractor and just kind of not, we didn't have a falling out. I was just over it. I think I was just exhausted. We were to a point where really the big stuff was done. And I could just kind of figure it out on my own. He hired another electrician that he knew to come out, but he, and this is when I'm going to tell you again, do not pay for something until it's completed. My contractor had known this electrician for a really long time, the first one that abandoned us. He paid him in full. So he had no incentive to come back and finish my job. Zero. No incentive to come back and he didn't even have a guilty conscience, you know, just gone. And so my contractor had to hire a new electrician to come out and finish this job. He hired him. He was awesome. Yeah. Awesome. Was so impressed by all the things that I was doing myself. Would come over and help me do other stuff. Not even charge, you know, like just with knowledge and stuff, because he had built a lot and done things outside of electrical. Loved him. He came out. He got our electricity turned on. He was awesome. And then he submitted the bill to my contractor and I got a call from my contractor. Just, I think, venting more than anything about the fact that I was like, what do you mean? He wanted like, it was like $2,000 for the work that he had done. And he was like, that was expensive, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, are you calling me right now for more money? It's not my fault. I'm like, what do you mean? Where's the money that we paid for the other electrician? He was like, well, I paid him. You paid him? Why'd you pay him for not finishing a job? And I'm like, are you calling to ask me right now for more money after we had already had to buy more materials, after we already had delays, after everything already cost more? He's like, no, I'm just explaining what was going on. And I was like, well, cool.
I think he was before he heard the tone in your voice.
He was. I think he thought I would just give him money. Because I had actually done that before when we had the plumbing things and the problems. I just felt bad and I shouldn't have felt bad. It's not personal, but you know, I think he thought, I was just tired. And I was just like, no, I'm not, it's really not, you know, whatever. From episode 5 to DIY or not to DIY when renovating a home. With all the DIYs that I did for the kitchen, would I do the cabinets again? The boxes? Yes. 100%. It's super custom. It's exactly the measurement that I want. I get the exact design and size that I want. I would 100% do that again. Would I do the cabinet doors again? Now, I am freshly off this project, so I have a little bit of trauma. I'm a little traumatized. Can I do them again? Yes. Would I? And I think through the process of doing our cabinet doors, I've just realized that I am not a machine. I am not going to do things as perfect as a computer would do. And that's really what these companies use. They don't cut everything by hand. They're not assembling things by hand. A machine is making this and cutting them. And I would look into first finding a cabinet door that I could get custom. I think when I looked, it was going to cost us like $60 a door front. Well, now I made them for a lot cheaper than that. I just made it for the cost of the wood. So I probably made our cabinet doors, if I had to guess, and I will be doing the math for the next episode, but $10, maybe $10. I saved a lot of money, but I'm not a machine and I'm not a computer. There is human error and it's handmade, so they're not perfect. And I am a perfectionist and I see a lot of imperfections in some things. Did I do a great job? Yes, I am proud of the work that I did. Could they have been perfect and machine made? Yeah. From episode 6, budgets and costs for our home renovation. Let's say I want to renovate the kitchen. I'm going to draw out what I want. I'm going to dream big and back up from there, right? So I'm going to draw out what I want. I'm going to figure out what's possible, reformat the layout, you know, figure out what I want to add in. I obviously value high-end appliances and plumbing. That's really what we put into the cottage too. I wouldn't do the renovation unless I could get what I want, if that makes sense. So I would figure out what I wanted and then figure out how much that cost. Then I would save the money for that and I would do it. So I don't necessarily think that that's having a budget. I think that that's figuring out what you want and if it's valuable to you and it's attainable and we can save over the next, you know, year or however long. I don't know how much it would cost in California to redo a kitchen. You know, and then we would work from there. I didn't have a budget, so to speak. We took every project for the cottage one step at a time. And if I could do it, I tried. And so if I could save, I really couldn't save on material costs because obviously that was a standard, whether someone else did it for me or not. But what I could save on was labor. And in a time in 2020, trying to build and get tradesmen out to our town when it was outside, you know, 45 minutes outside of a major city, and when tradesmen were already so busy or charging an arm and a leg, I kind of didn't have a choice. It was really, I couldn't get anyone to come and do it. So I was forced to DIY a lot more than maybe I initially thought I was going to. So there were a lot of factors that went into all of it. So technically, no, I didn't set a budget. I didn't have a breakdown of like, okay, I'm only going to put this much into this room or this much into that room. And maybe it was me being naive or a little bit ignorant to the process because I hadn't ever done it before, didn't know how to set one. From episode 7, what it's really like to renovate our first homes with Lone Fox.
Did demo scare you when you had to demo that kitchen?
It did because like the walls were just coming off, like the tile, it was ripping off. But the thing is that my contractor that I was talking to was like, no, like you should be able to just get it right off, like off the surface. And I'm like trying to chip it off the surface. And no. It was so hard. Like, and you, I swear like on demo shows on like HGTV, they're just like demoing so fast. No. It took me like 2 days to demo the kitchen, just to tile on the walls. And yeah. I thought it was going to, I swear to you, be like an hour long process.
Yeah.
Easy.
I remember watching and starting the video, right? And I knew you had already been working on it. And I knew how hard tile was to get off. And
it's
I started
awful.
Your video and you literally started by saying like, I don't think it's going to be that hard. And I was like audibly, like, I'm like, try it, Drew.
Well,
go try it.
Well, also because I knew that you had done all this already. And I'm like, if McKenna's done it, I could probably
right.
do it. If McKenna's
really?
Done it, I could probably do it. And then like, I got
you
to it and
know
I was like,
I
this
was like
is
secretly
so,
like really strong.
Literally.
Right?
Yeah. And also something else that makes it atrocious to get tile off the wall is if they use the mesh backed tile.
Oh, it pulls off the, yeah. It,
because the mesh gets stuck and then you can't get it off.
No.
But if they use individual tiles, they pop off easier. But
yeah.
The mesh ones are awful. So bad. So it was like ripping holes. I had to have the entire kitchen re-drywalled because it was just coming all off.
So something that I get asked a lot and something I talked about last episode was setting budgets, how much
yeah.
things cost.
Mm-hmm.
And so I explained that I didn't have a budget because going into a process like this, I didn't know how to set one.
Oh, same.
Right?
So, exactly.
So you're the same. Like, did you come into this project having a budget and knowing what you were going to spend when you've never done something like this before?
So a little, I only knew what I was going to spend on the marble. Like,
okay.
So when because I knew that that was going to be like my one expensive thing. I knew I was keeping all the cabinets. I knew I was doing all the labor myself.
Right.
So I knew that like the flooring and the painting and all that, like,
it was just going to be
material cost. Yeah. So like, I kind of was like, I could spend more on the marble. And so that's what I did was like,
yeah.
I tried to find like a stone yard that had like good price on the marble.
Yes.
And then also, like that had the marble that I wanted as well. So once
right.
I finally found that stone yard, I got all the marble that I wanted because I knew that was going to actually take up like a ton of the visual space
oh,
in the
totally.
Kitchen. Because this
you
was
went
actually
up the
an
walls.
Afterthought too. That was an afterthought.
Did you have extra pieces?
Yes. Those are all extra pieces. And it just happened to work that they look so good in there.
Yeah.
Because they're actually flipped. The veinings all flipped.
I see, yeah.
And when they first installed it, I hated it. I hate it. And they installed it and I was like, I just made the biggest mistake of my life. Because like, because actually before it was installed, I darkened all of this marble. So it was lighter when
oh.
they installed it. And they went over it with an ager and it deepens all the veins.
Oh, I didn't even know you could do that.
So actually something else that I haven't said is that the countertops, I didn't put the ager on because they were wrapped. The right. backsplash has all the ager on it, but you can't really tell because it's like
I would have never noticed.
Never known, and that's why I didn't say anything because you can't tell.
Well, that's good to know that you can age. You can age it if you want to.
It deepens the color, and you can keep aging it. So you can age it once, let it like cure, and then age it again, and it will keep darkening and darkening and darkening. But it doesn't affect like the white of the marble. It just
whatever color pigment.
That
is fascinating.
It's called Ager Tiger.
Ager Tiger.
Yeah, you can Google it. It's like $100 for a little can like this. Ooh. But it'll do your whole kitchen. And it just like, it's like if you were to like put like wood polish on wood. It's the same thing for marble.
Like makes it more vibrant. And
it's
brings
so
it.
Pretty. And the second they did it here, I was like, I'm obsessed with it. But in light form, when the marble was like honed and very like chalky, I did not like it at all. Because it just looked like you could tell that it was like different pieces and it wasn't like one solid piece, but then also putting items in front of it helps.
Yeah.
It kind of breaks up the like marbling.
Cause sometimes when you look at things, when they're in the state, you kind of have to trust the process when you're going through a renovation, because you'll get to a point where you're like, oh, I don't like that, but let me keep going. Cause it might be just the first layer.
Exactly. Literally, that was like at the Sonza family house when I painted that room pink.
Yeah.
And every day I walked into that room being like, I hate it, but I need to stick with it. Like, I hate this color.
You just
color
have to keep going.
Because it can shift. Like, you bringing in the bed and adding the bedding can change the entire color of the room.
From upcycling decor and materials and how to create a very unique home. Even when you think something can't be reused again and maybe it would be trashed. Like, I could have thought that about our front porch. Our front porch was in really bad shape when we bought the cottage. It was severely water damaged. The floor was really rotten and it was built on 2x4s, so it wasn't going to last much longer. And I had 3 porch posts out there in the front and they were rotting about 2 inches up on the bottom. So they wouldn't have been tall enough to reuse again. And I don't know, they were compromised in a lot of ways to hold structure like that. So I was like, I can use these for something, I know. So I took, when we demoed the porch, I took them to the back. And one of the things that I thought about was reusing them as the kind of like edge of our island, because I was building our island from scratch. So I cut down a portion of these porch posts and used them 3 along the front of our island to create bar seating. And they're so cool. Like, that's such a cool thing that was originally part of the house in some way that I could have thrown away. But I didn't. I did. And there are 3 more, like another section of those porch posts were still in good shape. So I was like, oh, let me save these. These could be like really cool, like chunky candle holders, like wooden ones. And it's very similar to the candle holders, the stone, these are stone, not wood, but stone candle holders that I just put on our outdoor dining area. They kind of give me that look and that feel. I'm like, these are so cool. You know, so you could think that I'm a hoarder. Do you know what I mean? You could really think that I save things for absolutely no reason, but I'm really not. I save things for a specific period of time. And if I haven't figured out what to do with it yet, I go ahead and donate or send it to the appropriate destination. You know.
From episode 9, vintage and antique decor, finding, buying, and decorating.
Let's actually talk about why we love it. Because I love it because I think I find more unique items when they're vintage and antique, that's not sitting on a shelf and it's mass produced somewhere. I think it creates more of an eclectic, interesting home when things are found and curated. It also tells a little bit of history, like this, you know, I remember where I bought this and I remember, I don't know, like I feel like there's so many reasons why I love going to estate sales and going and finding those items. Why do you
I usually I can remember where something was sitting and what house it was sitting
in. Yeah, I can too.
And who I was with when I saw it and why I wanted it. Sometimes I remember why I have to go back the next day and wait in line again because I didn't get it the first time, because I go home and I think about it all night. So that really gets an imprints it on my mind. But I really think that it's just that if you go to a store and that, which there's nothing wrong with that. If you need a particular thing. No,
and sometimes I live for that. We're not sitting here saying like,
no.
I only buy, you know, like, I feel like there's some ways of like going overboard and trying to push a certain lifestyle or what you buy onto other people. And no, I live for a good new shopping trip. I think it, I just do it with a balance. I do recognize that buying things secondhand from thrift shops and estate sales is keeping those things out of the landfill and less consumption of new things. And I do think that in the back of my mind. And I think that there is a way to live with a balance. And I think that we do a great job of that with valuing a new thing. Sometimes I just want something that's new that hasn't been touched before.
And new things can have a memory too. Like when totally. when I go meet you in LA, we go shopping. We can go to a place and I buy something new.
Yeah.
And I love it. And it reminds me of that. It's anything that you feel that will make your home more, feel your house feel more like a home.
Exactly.
Then you need to get it.
Exactly.
I mean, or at least try to get it. And it's just I seem to find more things at estate sales that have history, and that's what I gravitate toward.
Yeah.
Is the history behind those things. But I'm not above buying a beautiful piece of material to make something out of that I can get today.
Or even a new piece of furniture. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes there's just something to be said about getting something new, and like, we would be discrediting anyone new, the new ideas that are coming into the world and the new artists that are, you know, cabinet makers and furniture makers that would be making something. We would be discrediting any new ideas by not buying anything new and innovative, by only buying old.
But then therein lies the story behind it. It would have a story because of the artist and the years.
There would be a reason behind it, yeah.
They took to learn how to do what they're doing and all to make something that you would value and you would love in your home. So it's just a story behind something. Instead of sitting down and going through a catalog and having a room and going, okay, I need a couch, I need a chair, and I need a coffee table.
Yeah, done. Like you're checking them off your list, yes, and then yes. It has no you have no attachment to it. It's right. Just a physical thing that you needed. Yeah, right. we don't function like that
at
all.
Bottom line is build a home.
Build a home, not a house.
From episode 10, best and worst decisions we've made when building homes.
I did not do it in my house I'm in now, but I had it in the house before this one, was a fan, the exhaust fan over your stove.
Oh, that's one of my best too.
Right above the, is right there.
Yes.
Right there. And it's very loud.
Yeah. So when you're cooking and you turn on your vent to like vent the cooking smells and steam and stuff. You can buy them detached. You can buy the blower and the actual vent hood separately, so that you can actually extend the blower, which is what we did because she gave me this idea to put the blower up into the attic, and then it blows out the house. So the loud noise that it makes doesn't make that right in your ear when you're cooking. You, like at her house right now, you can't even hear yourself think.
No.
When you're
and
cooking.
If you have company around your island and you're trying to visit and all of a sudden you've got to pick between the cooking smells and steam and everything going into your kitchen or venting. And I have literally had to say, wait just a minute, let me turn this on.
Yeah, 100%.
So always, that is a huge, huge thing to put the blower in your attic.
Right.
She said that
so many times during me renovating that I was like, I've got to get this separate. I've got to put the blower up in the attic and you can't even hear it. Like it's so light.
That's a wonderful thing. If you can do that, that's a great thing.
From episode 11, how I designed my dream life doing what I love.
You know, I don't go blindly into anything. I won't blindly do something just because it's making some form of money. I want to work smarter, not harder. So everything that we did, like if I was spending a lot of time doing, you know, whatever, charging the scooters. If I made more money doing another one of those independent contractor jobs, I'd do the better one, you know? So I was always assessing. I was always analyzing what is working, what isn't, what's making me the most money in the least amount of time, and doing those because it was really about saving as much time as I had so that I could dedicate it to building the bigger picture, you know? So a lot of those jobs were created and a lot of those businesses were created based on doing something that I thought I was good at over what was going to make me happy. And this was a pivotal, pivotal moment. This is when the idea of me being happy on purpose really started to play into everything, because I stepped back from all of these odd jobs and all of these things that I still wasn't happy. I was an entrepreneur and I still wasn't happy. I made this leap and I still wasn't happy. What was wrong? And I was like, I need to look at this differently. If I have the ability right now to do anything I want, right? I have the less than the 2 years now, but a substantial amount of money saved that I have my cushion that I can stay, my life can stay afloat. How can I use this time to really build something that I'm really, really going to love? And once I started designing that life, I was like, okay, let me put in plans for how I can get there. What can I do that's going to get me to that lifestyle, to those things? Romeo and I would drive through really nice neighborhoods delivering for Amazon Fresh, and we would like really nice neighborhoods. Like, these houses were beautiful. And it was kind of an excuse. I actually really enjoyed that one because it was an excuse to walk up to these gorgeous homes and just like be in awe, you know? And I'm like, I had this mentality when I would go up to these homes and I'm like, this person did that. This person afforded that home. This person has done something in their life to get to that stage. I'm like, I love this house. I want this to be me. How can I make this into a reality? And if you know anything about me and my content, you know that my home is very important. Like, it's, yes, it's, you could say that it's a material thing, but it's not. Your home is your home. And home has always been really, really important. So nice design and enough space to grow into and a place to call home and to have your family has always been super important. So when we would see these beautiful homes, I'm like, that, look how pretty this one is. And I would take notes of like the design that was, you know, one that I really liked or something. And I would jot down the address and I would look up the pictures so that I could see what it looked like on the inside. And when I started, that helped me play into designing my perfect life. From episode 12, chatting with mom about building a home as women in a male-dominated industry. What was the one thing that came to mind, one instance that came to mind that just like gave you that face when I asked you, like, what was your experience being on site on a construction site and being treated a certain way, however way, good or bad?
I think the one that stood out for me when you asked me
was
about the windows.
The windows?
The windows in the house on the hill that I'm in now. The windows.
What happened with
the windows? They came in wrong. They had, okay. There were a lot of the windows that were sitting on the slab.
Yeah, literally on the floor, right. Yeah.
And they had to cut the bottom off that was normally would sit on the window sill. They had to cut that part off to be able to anchor them into the slab. Well, that was all fine and good off the ones that were going to sit on the slab. The company cut it off of all of my windows.
Oh no. Yeah. Not all of them sit all on the ground like that.
No, there were a lot that went into like window sills.
Yeah.
A foot or 2 foot off the ground. So when they came in, which we waited a very long time, we ordered our windows the day we signed the contract for the house to be built. And
because you kind of have to. The lead times on windows and
are long.
Are, yes, long. The windows specifically are very, very long.
Yes. It was then and it is now.
Yeah.
And so we had windows we couldn't use. So the builder, they called them and they said that they were going to just nail them into the screw them in. Well,
like screw them into the frame of the wood. If,
right,
they sat up higher.
Put a piece of wood.
I see.
Anyway, they were going to finagle it, yeah, to where they would screw them in. Well, to a piece of wood. Well, the wood over time and everything would shrink, and it wouldn't last because the screws would be, the wood would swell and get with temperature changes, and I would have leaks. So these were going on window seals. You see that the bottom was cut. The actual sealant for the water was cut off to keep it from leaking. So my builder actually went to bat for me and said, no, these aren't, we have to redo them. So instead of putting the windows ahead of everybody else because they did them wrong, they put me behind everybody else.
Why would they do that?
Well, they didn't tell me they were doing that at the time, but it put us on, you have to have the windows to be able to go advance with the house, with the sheetrock.
Yeah, because your house has to be dried in.
Exactly.
So that it actually protects the next stages of the build. So the windows and being dried in, having your exterior up is like so, it's vital. It's the only way to move forward.
Right. So we had to get them in. Well, when I waited. Finally, when I got to talk to the head guy, he said that Fiesta was coming up, something in San Antonio that everybody
takes off for
a couple or 3 weeks. And so that was coming up. It was a bunch of things.
Like holiday things coming up.
And it was just a nightmare. And we were 3 months out on the windows. And that was, that was unacceptable to me. And it's slow. Everything stopped at the build for 3 months. And he came down from Dallas to talk with me.
The owner of the window company?
Yes, because I was going to take all the windows out of the house and put them on the cul-de-sac, and he could come and pick them up because they were made wrong.
Oh, she said, snap. She said, you can come and pick up your windows. I'm putting them on the street.
Yeah, because unfortunately for him, I hadn't paid for them yet. I had just put a deposit
love
down.
Love that for us.
Which covered for the windows that actually worked, that were
so all the
slab.
Ones that were wrong, you were putting on. Yeah, they could come get.
At the street.
Okay, yes. So he was flying down to see
I
you.
I said, send a truck.
Yeah, I don't blame you. Yeah. That,
and I'll get my windows from somewhere else.
Yeah.
And they'll be made right because I'm not going to rig this up to where I have problems later.
Yeah.
So he flew down and his right-hand man flew down. And they were going to meet with my builder and then the head of my contract, the contractor that was head of my particular job, me and my husband. Well, my husband your dad couldn't make it that day. He was doing in Houston. And we were there on the cul-de-sac. We were waiting for your dad to get there. And they told me that, in his words, were he would rather wait until my husband got there so that he would explain it all to my husband and then he could explain it to him in a way that I could understand.
Oh my.
I'm just saying.
Did you kill him? Is he alive right now? We're saying that like.
My builder and the job head of my job, they both took a step back.
Oh my.
And I turned to him and I just looked at him. I couldn't believe. I was just absorbing what he had said. And
I'd be hiding behind the house.
I told him, I said, well, you let me know how that works out for you and all of your meeting that you're fixing to have. And when you decide to figure out what you are going to do and where we go from there, you give me a call and I'll let you know what you are and are not going to do. And I turned and went in the house. Well, the so-called house with the windows.
I can't believe that's all you said to him.
I did, and I left. And so they were like, well, your dad got there, and it was like, what did y'all decide? What did she say? And everybody was, well, she didn't say anything. We hadn't talked to her. We were waiting for you. And he said, oh, buddy, you made a mistake.
Oh, yeah.
He said, yeah. And so I, in not so polite terms, told them that everyone there was working for me, and that they were going to take their windows back and they were going to put me at the head of the line and I was going to get my windows. Even with that, it took another 6 weeks to get the windows.
Oh, yeah. Because, I mean, still the time to actually do them.
Yes.
I did inevitable.
Get put to the top of the line. But yeah. it was just, that was his first, he didn't even look at me. He dismissed me from the get-go.
From episode 13, how I've avoided burnout through home renovations and life.
I think it's really important for us to know when to slow down and to recognize the signs. And I think the signs are going to be different for all of us. But I am very much in that phase of like, I was reaching it. And I've gotten really good over the years of recognizing when that's about to happen so it doesn't happen. So I can actually pull back before I hit rock bottom burnout. Because rock bottom burnout is like pretty bad. Rock bottom burnout is not coming out of it for a while. And to where everything has to stop in order for me to pick back up maybe weeks, if not a month later. You know, and that's not ever a place that I ever wanted to get into again, like I've had in the past when I was younger. So I would recognize the burnout. This just happened to me last week. And I just clean house. I say, okay, like clean house mentally and project wise. I'm like, okay, no, stop everything. We have to regroup. And I sit down and work wise, I start to make a list of all of the things that are urgent. All of the things that are priority, and I make a plan to tackle them, and I don't ever go back and look at the list. Like I focus on one thing at a time, and anything that's not priority, anything that's not important, it does not happen. I take it off my to-do list. If it pops back up in my head about something I want to do later on, it'll go back on the list, but I don't even want to see it. I don't even want to think about it. I clean my desk off. I move everything that's not priority out of my way. No, I've got to cleanse. I've got to, like, it's almost like you're on a boat and you've just put so, like, each project or each thing in your life is a weight. And you've literally picked up a dumbbell and you put, okay, this is another project. And you're putting so many of these weights in your boat that you're sinking. And if you can recognize that there's too much weight before you sink, you can take the weight off. But if you don't recognize that the weights are sinking your boat and you sink, your boat sunk. Then you have to climb your way out of that. And that is, I found, so much harder than kind of recognizing the signs. From episode 14, how I learned to love being alone and maximize my creativity. I am alone most of the days of my life, and I like it. Now, there was a time, so okay, let's back up. I was in the corporate world, which you guys have probably heard if you've heard like my backstory here on the podcast. It was like episode one, and then I think episode like 11 or 10, I really dived deep into my past and all of the jobs and all of the kind of quote unquote careers that I've had before starting to share my projects online and how they were very different than what I'm doing now. And through those jobs, I was never alone. You know, I'd wake up, I'd get ready for work, I'd be in the office by 8 or 9 o'clock, depending on what job I was at the time. I would spend all day with people. I was the manager of multiple teams, so I would deal with all the people's problems and all the drama and all the mistakes and all the fix all the things. And then I would come home, you know, exhausted. And that takes a toll on you that like you don't even realize until you turn it off. You know, so coming out, when I finally quit my corporate job at I was about to turn 29. So that was 2017. Yes, June 16th, 2017. I had to go through like a 6 month or longer, like detox. Like I had to detox from the world that I previously was in. Being around people, talking to people all the time, having that like person to person kind of like stimulation and contact, talking about things out loud, you know, just in general, to now being an entrepreneur, working from home, being alone. it was such, I didn't realize that I needed to go through that detox. I didn't know that that was even a thing. It was super weird. And then Romeo, at the time when I left my corporate job, he was still working a very traditional full-time job. So he, oh my gosh, he actually was working two jobs at the time, I think. He was working, he would wake up like at 4 or 5 a.m. and go and work until like 3. And then he would go to another job and work. And then we barely saw each other for that first time. So I think I was starkly alone, which it was not great for my mental health. Like, I was in an apartment the whole time. And then we got Kinsley. That was one of the things that I really wanted. When I left my corporate job, we adopted Kinsley. And that, our dog, which is sleeping here, but you can't see her. She's like balled up. That was major, because then it gave me a companion. It gave me, now Romeo's my companion, I guess, but it gave me someone that was around all the time, that worshiped me, that listened to me talk. She was a godsend. Like, she is my baby. She's perfection in every way. So that really helped me with my alone time in the beginning. And then I started to realize that when I'm alone, like this past weekend, no, a couple weekends ago, when I was painting the room that I'm currently sitting in. So if you're watching on the YouTube video, you can see that our newly decorated and renovated living room. When I was painting this room that weekend, Romeo was actually at a bachelor trip. And we both have jobs now where we kind of are like in and out all day. You know, like I'll be working on something, or I'll be running errands, or he'll be working and running errands. And we kind of, we see a lot more of each other now than we actually did when we were working traditional 9-to-5 jobs, which I'm very, very happy about, because we like never saw each other. When he was working two jobs, we never saw each other. Recently, he went to that bachelor party. So it was just me and the house. I literally did not leave our house from Friday when he left to when he got home late Sunday evening. So all day Friday, all day Saturday, and all day Sunday, I was completely alone in our house, and I thrived. Now, I am a Cancer. I am a homebody. I like to be at home. I like my alone time. I like the peace and the solitude. Like, I truly enjoy it. And it has been something that I've appreciated more and more as years have gone on since leaving my corporate job. I'm so much more at peace. I'm so much healthier mentally than I used to be. So it that's a definitely big contributor. So when he was gone on the bachelor party, I was thriving. It was just me. I didn't really, you know, we eat dinner together, obviously, or lunch or whatever. So sometimes I'll wait for him, or I'll call him, be like, hey, like, what do you want to dinner? What are we going to make? Oh, where are we going to go somewhere? Are we going to make Alfred? What are we going to do? Or where are you? I'm going to run an errand. It's like, just the coordination of it all was not me being alone. You know, like, I didn't have any of that coordination. I didn't even talk to him all weekend. I'm like, bye. Like, have fun. You know, like, it was my me time. I painted this whole room, and I love painting. It's like my therapy. I love like the sound that the brush makes when I roll it. I don't know. It's very therapeutic. Like, my projects in general are very therapeutic for me. And I like doing my projects solo, alone, when I'm not pressured by anyone else to tell them something that they can do. Like, you know, when I was having a lot of help early in the renovations, you know, obviously I was getting help and they were being helpful, but I had to think of things that they could help me with that actually stressed me out more than just doing it myself. It's like, I would have to be more planned, and I'm not a very planned person with my physical part. Like, I am planned in general, like the general, okay, I'm working on this room and today I'm going to work on this project, but not nitty gritty, not to where I have like a checklist of things that need to be done. And I need, okay, like maybe he could help me with this, or my mom can help me with that. That I didn't thrive with, but I appreciated the help, obviously. But it didn't really allow me time to be really creative with my video creation and my DIY projects. So then we entered a world where I was like, no, I just really enjoy being productive and working on my projects alone. From episode 15, renovating a home that's not only designed for you, but also increases your property value. There's this balance between designing a home for yourself and designing a home and putting the things in it that are actually going to increase the value of the home so that you get a positive return on your investment later on. So it's like you're kind of juggling both of these worlds. And when I was going through that process, I started to make those types of decisions, and I started to think about even decisions like the size of the oven. In this caliber of a house and this market in California, where we're at, having a chef style cooktop and a chef style oven being on the larger side, I think is one of the things that we can do to really increase the value. Obviously, the appliances play into the value of the home a lot. The kitchen, upgrading the kitchen is going to increase the value a lot of the home. So thinking about those things, I was like, man, there really is a, I don't really think it, well, is it a, it's kind of a struggle. Between designing a home for you and designing a home that you are going to sell. Like if I was to enter into a house that I was just going to flip, right? We were going to invest in buying the house. We were going to look at it very strategically on how can we do the most with a limited budget to maximize our profit. But when you own your home and you're living there, which I think a lot of us do, a lot of us aren't flippers. I'm not a flipper. I don't go into homes and do that. I don't go into them with that mindset. I really design it for me, and my style is not really like anybody else's. You know, so it's like, oh, well, I mean, it's when we bought this house, it was all painted white and it was a white canvas and a white box, and I don't really gravitate towards anything really super modern or trendy. So my style is always a little different. But I think a lot of us go into situations where we're designing a house and we're doing makeovers on rooms that are our whole house in general that are just for us. And we're not really thinking about that resale value, that is this going to impact the home in a positive or a negative way? I don't really think we think about that when we're just living there. We just want to live better and make it our home. So I'll tell you, I think there is a balance, and we'll get into it and kind of the decisions that I'm making with this house and how they differed from the cottage. Now, when I think I was house happy. I was like, this is the first thing that I've owned. I have always rented. I have always, you know, just like lived in someone else's space. I have been trying to express my creativity and my design in someone else's space. And now I have the keys to something that no one can tell me anything. You know, like no one can come in here and say, you can't do that. You can't do that. I'm like, I can do anything. And I think I got really excited. And there was a couple of things that I did in that house. Now, a lot of the decisions were great. And I have greatly, and know this for a fact, because I have talked to my realtor about the value of the cottage and what it is, just for my own information, just for my own, you know, kind of like in my head, have we increased the value? I just wanted to know. So I just had a realtor friend look at it, you know, and see what it was worth on the market. And just to have a basis for even you guys to tell you, you know. So there are a couple of things that I did that I don't think was in line with like, oh, this is going to elevate the house. So one of the things that I did in the cottage was put high-end appliances and plumbing fixtures. Now, I did this because I was doing so much of the labor and work myself on everything from demo to everything, building all the cabinetry, installing all the backsplashes, installing, you know, most of the plumbing things later on, you know, like the pretty stuff, building all of the, like the wall treatments and painting and everything that I could do, I was doing. So we were saving a lot of money on the total renovation by me actually doing all of that stuff myself. And so in my head, I'm like, man, I'm going to do all this work myself and we're going to save, you know, this chunk of money that we had allotted to the renovation. We're going to save that so that I have enough to actually invest in higher quality appliances and higher quality plumbing fixtures and that and the other, you know, so, or, and lighting, you know, lighting can get quite expensive. And all of these things that we're talking about, lighting, appliances, and plumbing fixtures can get very expensive. You know, odds are you're not going to sell your furniture can get expensive too, but odds you're not going to sell your house furnished, but you could. You totally could. We totally could. If that's something I want to do later in life, you know, we totally could. But odds are you're not going to do that. So that investment could go with you. And the lighting could also go with you too. I could swap lights out and take some of the lights that were more elevated and more higher end with me, you know, before we ever put it on the market. So there are options there. But when we think about the fact that in that level of a house, in that market, in that area, I outpriced the market by putting those luxury items and those high-end appliances and high-end fixtures in the house. That wasn't really a smart move.
From episode 16, Home to Neighborhood, how where we live shapes who we are and how we create.
Our surroundings, like the city that we live in, the area that we live in, whether it's a city or the countryside or the beach or the mountains or whatever it is, it's always going to affect our moods and our creativity. And I know that I'm affected by it a lot. When I'm in Texas for an extended period of time, like I have been, and I'm busy, but my mom's busy too, and I'm just like living there, you know, going to grab groceries, coming home, doing that stuff. I tend to start to go stir crazy because I'm like, it's almost like cabin fever. Like I feel like I've been cooped up and I can't just easily go out and do something. I do start to feel that because the town is just a little smaller. And that then conversely here, sometimes I feel like it's a little bit too much that I need to either shut the doors and just like be with myself here at home or take a trip, go to the cottage, have a little bit slower pace of life at the moment, spend some time with my family, spend some time with my mom. You know, sometimes we just need a change of scenery because wherever you are, it can greatly affect your mood and your creativity. So also your space, because this is big for me. I've always been a person to want to rearrange my space. And this goes back to me working like a corporate job too, like, or even like as a kid, I always wanted to like move things around and make things look different. I liked change in my space because it shook up the world. I saw things differently. When I was working my corporate job, especially a couple of fashion jobs, I was always ended up in a manager position of like a certain little group of people within the company or a big group of people. And so I always tend to be adding team members to my group. And we would always be, it was all fashion. In the fashion world, they love open concept offices. They do not believe in closed doors, which is both great and not great at the exact same time. There's just like no conferences. There's no meeting rooms. There's no private space. They love, or at least the ones that I worked on, they love open concept. Well, it's just weird. It doesn't work. It doesn't look good. You can't decorate. It's just very odd. And it affected my like creativity a lot. Being like hearing everyone's conversations and like my workflow was negatively impacted by an open concept office. But I always found myself wanting to move around our desks to make it look better or have more flow. And I was constantly moving it around. Then when we got in, you know, we had our apartment, obviously, I would always want to like see if my bed or my couch looked better on another wall. And that shakeup and that change would affect my mood. It would affect, you know, how I looked and worked in the space. And so when I'm getting to like the house that we're renovating and I'm always experiment, like trying to change things up. I feel like this room will stay the same for quite a period of time. And then sometimes I'll come over and maybe take some of the art that's behind me and maybe move it to another room and swap things out. And when I find something I love, I want to incorporate it. And I feel like it like brings life back into a room that's been the same for a long time. And I feel like that affects a lot. Like when I work at home, I have my desk up against the windows. I'm surrounded by sunlight, which greatly affects me. I love that. I can't be cooped up in a room. I need sunlight. I need to look at things. I need, you know, kind of fresh air. I need to be out in the open of the house. So I don't have my office in a room. So I look out over our back yard area that we just redid. So I get to stare at it a lot. But that greatly affects like being able to wake up with my coffee and sit down at my desk when the morning sun is coming up and it's starting, you know, the calmness of the world is starting to wake up. And like recently, I've been noticing that butterflies will fly past the window. And it just brings a smile to my face and it affects me a lot. It puts me in a good mood. If I was cooped up in a room, I would never see the sunlight or the butterfly. And that's sad, especially like the decorations on my desk. Huge mood changer.
From episode 17, decorating for seasons with purpose and without breaking the bank.
Never really liked colors that were really kind of in your face or you saw or called attention. And so getting to this year, and particularly this house, I don't know what it is in me, but I'm like, I like that color. And I'm very gravitated. It's almost like a moth to a flame. It's like I'm very like attracted to it. So I'll pinpoint one color that I really love and I'll be all about it. So if you heard, throughout summer, I was obsessed with cornflower blue. If you follow me on my vlog channels, on the main channel, everywhere, I was obsessed with this color. Every time I would find it, it was like I was just drawn to it. I have a vase that's cornflower blue. I have pillows that I found in an estate sale that have little flowers that are the same color. I have taper candles. I have like a little pitcher thing. I was just drawn to it and I really liked decorating with it because I always tend to keep my foundational design really neutral. I always like to keep the, you know, like, okay, we're gonna, like even in this room right now, the furniture and the rug and the color palette is more muted but has warmth to it. Then I like to add in the color on top because I am fickle. I'm very fickle with my color. I don't tend to like it for very long periods of time. So I can't ever do it in a kind of permanent way. It has to be something that I can kind of pack away, you know, or like upcycle in a different way or something like that.
From episode 18, my best advice for first-time homebuyers.
I would recommend, I know that like you can feel like you're wasting your realtor's time if you want to see more houses or the amount of houses that you want to see. Maybe I was. We'll ask her when she comes. Did I waste your time by making you show me all these homes? I didn't care. I wanted to find the home. I recommend, and my advice would be to look at everything. Look at everything. Go everywhere. Look in whatever area you think. Look at houses that you don't even dream of buying because maybe they're out of your price range. Look at areas that maybe like you could see yourself there, but whatever. It doesn't matter. Look at everything. If something sparks your interest, I recommend looking at it. And you don't have to always go with your realtor. We would go, well, if I was going to go to a private showing, like if I wanted to see a house that didn't have an open house, I would text my realtor and be like, hey, like I want to see this house next when we go on these rounds, or when can you get me in to see this one? She would also send me ones from the MLS to look at, and I would kind of favorite them, the ones that I kind of like, and she would set up showings. Every time that I was back in town, she would set up showings. So we naturally went to a lot of them. She was all for it. And I think most realtors will be. And we didn't wait for her all the time. Sometimes we were in town just for maybe I was in town for a short period of time and it was a weekend and most open houses around this area or maybe everywhere are on Sundays. I'd go. There was an open house. I still do it. I haven't in a while because Romeo was like, no, you not need to look at houses. But I want to start looking at houses for like what they put in them. You know, like their new appliances. I love to just see like the newer builds because I want to see what they're kind of like putting in design wise and like layouts and things. It's just informational for me. And it's an open house. And anyone that says that I could be wasting someone's time. I think I saw a comment like that one time. They're like, you're wasting someone their time by going to an open house. No, you're not. It's an open house. Literally no one talks to you. Most of them don't. Like you're with like tons of other people. They put a sign on every street corner saying, basically it should say, please come. I'm not wasting anybody's time. At all, and neither are you. So go to the open houses just to get a feel for what's out there.
From episode 19, how traveling and change is great for life and creativity.
Or changing up your routine and changing up something in life really can give you a different perspective. And I know that traveling abroad isn't for everybody and you can't do it all the time. So I've been thinking about ways that I can do that here at home, and whether that is still traveling and maybe taking a small trip somewhere really close by where you can drive and maybe stay a night or two, or it's just a day trip to somewhere that you've never been close to home, especially as the season's changing and we're in fall now. I'm always inspired by the, you know, the changing leaves and the fall season and the brisk air and the colors. And so like going somewhere where you can see more of that change in the season could be really, really magical. Or I was even thinking like taking something that we probably do every day, whether you drive to and from work, or you're going to the grocery store, or you're taking a walk in your neighborhood. I was even thinking like, what about just changing the direction, driving a completely different way? You know, like take a different route. If there's a different route that you can take to work, try it. Maybe you're going to see a new restaurant that you want to try, or, you know, you're going to see things from a different way. Or even I thought on my walks through the neighborhood, I've actually already been doing this since I got back from Paris, because we walked so much all over the country. We were walking between 15,000 and 25,000 steps a day. And naturally, I don't do that many steps. And so coming home, I sit at a computer all day long, or I'm doing things with my arms, but I'm not really walking a lot. So I've been still walking through the neighborhood and I've been taking a different direction every day, which is cool because I'm seeing something different. I've even seen houses in our neighborhood that are beautiful and has inspired really random things like the landscaping for the cottage or something. You know, like I'll just take kind of a mental note of it, and it's really changed my perspective and really helped really like my creativity a lot.
From episode 20, Haunted Home Stories, reading our listeners' spooky encounters.
I believe because I can't say it's not true kind of thing. I'm a very big believer in energy. So good energy, bad energy. I'm very like, I can feel someone, even like, I'm not talking about ghosts or anything, but I'm feeling like, you know, like a person that I meet, I'm big on energy, you know, like in the exchange of it. So naturally that kind of crosses over into that realm, you know? So I was in college and we, Romeo and I were already together. We had been together probably about two years at that point. And I was going back for my second degree at FITM. I was going back for my business degree. And it was a really hard time to get jobs at that point. And I remember we were trying to figure out I needed to move out of my current apartment. That I never had any weird experiences at. We needed to move out of that apartment and into something more affordable because we were having a lot of problems like finding jobs at that time. It was like that 2008 downturn of the economy. So it was really hard to get jobs in fashion or anywhere. So we were both really working waiter and waitresses jobs. I was, you know, doing lots of different things. I was still interning. And we were trying to scale back and figure out how we could get a new apartment and save some money. So we actually decided to move in with Romeo's sister. And we were living in an apartment complex. And I don't think that lots of things in LA are kind of torn down and then built on. So there could have been something happened that